Rough Trade is giving away a third of the first 3 months of the Rough Trade Club plus new music membership exclusively to 101 Part-Time Jobs listeners. Become a member of Rough Trade Club New Music and you'll receive the Rough Trade Album of the Month straight to your door every month on an exclusive vinyl pressing with bonus material. Club members have received exclusive pressings of albums from Sufjan Stevens, Sprints, The Last Dinner Party, English Teacher, and Over Mono, just to name a few, this past year alone. Sign up using the promo code CLUB101POD and you'll get Rough Trade's Album of the Month, Camera Obscura's Look to the East, Look to the West, for a third of the usual price. By signing up, you'll be getting Rough Trade's exclusive issue of the album on opaque purple in a gatefold sleeve, plus a bonus CD containing 5 demos. Don't want the album of the month but still want all the benefits? Sign up to the standard tier using CLUB101POD and you'll still get the first month free. You'll also get free shipping on all orders, 10% off at the bar and on secondhand vinyl in store, and exclusive access to sold out Rough Trade events. So don't hang around. Head to roughtrade.com/club and sign up with the code CLUB101POD. That's CLUB101POD and claim money off Rough Trade's Album of the Month today. This offer is for UK residents only. Do you play in bands? I did for the longest time, and I wish that I knew that DistroKid was a thing. I don't even think it existed back then. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of your royalties and earnings. 1 million+ artists rely on DistroKid to get their music on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all the major streaming services. When you get DistroKid, you can see a DistroKid bank and withdraw your earnings. You get notified when you've earned royalties and you can withdraw via the app. And you can even check your streaming stats on Spotify and Apple. Get 30% off your first year on DistroKid by going to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. 30% off for your first year. That's not bad. We know it's a tough world out there. Why don't you make it easier for yourself? And to get 30% off that free year as an artist, where you get 100% of your royalties and earnings, go to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. All right, stay with me. I'll be right back after this.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, you're listening to 101 Part-Time Jobs. It's the podcast where I speak to bands and artists about winging it, about getting by. On today's episode, James and Tom, brothers Wing from the band The Roves, who've just released their excellent album, a seriously, seriously great record, Needle Factory. This Saturday, they're playing the album release show at the Lexington in London. Pop along to that. It's a fiver in. You can't sniff at that. And I, for one, am very looking forward to it. Cheers for listening to 101 Part-Time Jobs. New episodes every Tuesday and sometimes Thursday. And yeah, I'm aware today's Wednesday. Tomorrow we've got an episode with Owen from The Tubs. I'm thrilled to have so many great guests and so many artists making amazing music on here and telling their stories. If you're looking for a good festival to go to this summer, in July it's 2000 Trees who support this podcast. They've made some amazing announcements to their lineup in the last few weeks. If you're into rock and punk and a bit of metal, this one's for you. They've just announced Bullet for My Valentine to join Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes as their headliners, and that's on top of 100 Reasons, Rival Schools, The Bronx, Black Honey, Prima Queen, The Chisel, Bad Nerves, Narrowhead, Bat Sabbath, which is Cancer Bats playing Black Sabbath tunes. There's tons and tons of amazing bands and artists playing. Head to 2000trees.co.uk for the lineup. It's going to be a great weekend. If you want to go but haven't got your ticket yet, now's a good time to press that button. With the voucher code 101POD at checkout, you can get 20 quid off the price and you can use that money for much better things. 2000trees.co.uk, voucher code 101POD to get 20 quid off. All right, here's Tom and James from The Roves. A pre-warning that my audio sounds a little bit rubbish on this. We did it at home and I sort of messed it up. But here are The Roves. Listen to their third album, Needle Factory. And if you're in London, head to their show at the Lexington this Saturday. Go well. Cheers.
We got asked about this in guitar.com about like the DIY thing. And they were like, oh, what, you know, why did you choose to be DIY? Or it, like, the question was, but it was as if like we'd kind of chosen to go that way, but it's only because no one else is doing it for us. Like, I always say, like, it would be great if there was, but because no one is, or like no one, you know, can be bothered, then we just do it ourselves anyway, because it's like the only way to like get things done is just to sort of like go about and do like videos by yourself. Just do the record by yourself without...
So a DIY album necessity rather than choice.
Because then you'll be waiting around forever to for basically someone to like make things happen to you. And you just go out and like get it for yourself. That's kind of how I see it, really.
Yeah, there's no fun in waiting, really, is
no.
There?
Yeah. No, you just want to get things done. Yeah.
I think our approach is just go make all the stuff, and then if people get interested in it in their own time, then, you know, so be it. But... Yeah, the idea of having to wait, because we could still be waiting to do the first album now if we haven't done that, you know. And then you've got like 140 songs waiting to be recorded. It'd be too mammoth.
Do you think there is a, because of course, maybe I'm off the mark here, but you know, I think it's probably commonplace to say, you know, if you're writing music and recording music and you're playing with other people, mm-hmm. it'd be great to share that with a bigger number of people, whether that's 10 people or 100 people.
Oh, yeah.
So with that in context of mind, you know, I wonder if there's always that kind of rub up where you know what you are and you know how you want to do it, and there's this kind of other side of your brain, which is like, well, how can we make it a bigger thing? Sure. How can we widen our net?
Obviously, like, I don't want to mince words. The ultimate kind of aim of doing this is to, like, do it as a living and, like, have recognition and, you know, be popular and like, make a lot of money from it. I think that's what everyone... Whether they like to admit it or not, that's what kind of everyone gets in it for.
But
basically, while we're at the stage, and just anything like just sharing it on any like platform or anything, it's just like it's just all about spreading the word.
But you only want to do it on your own terms, though. You're not musically on your own terms.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you would have just said, "Oh, what's popular, let's try and design a song to sound like..." Because that's what people do.
It really seems to me like people are kind of, especially now, people are kind of working out as they go along.
Sure.
There isn't really a well-trodden path to making a record successful or
that's
to
true.
Selling out tickets to a tour. You know, I feel like everyone's kind of working it out.
Yeah, definitely.
People at the label included.
Yeah.
Especially then.
I think that's the thing, is like, it's not like... There's not like the 90s where there's literally loads and loads of money where they can just afford to just like spend money on a band and then nothing really happens and then that they can write it off. It's a bit more harder for them to do it, so they take fewer risks maybe.
Yeah.
So then it's a bit more difficult from that perspective, because maybe I don't know. I presume, but I wasn't around then, so maybe it's always been the same.
Could I ask how old you are? Is that rude?
I'm 30.
Yeah, I'm 32.
It feels like just as we were getting as teenagers and starting bands and maybe going on tour at 17, the days had just gone.
Yeah.
Of the tens of thousands of pounds deals.
Yeah.
Maybe bands like the Maccabees and that era of NME indie rock. It seems to me like that was the last time where there was
that's true.
Money that you could float and maybe go, you know, live off it.
And
write every day.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing like the Maccabees and Bombay Bicycle Club, all those types of bands at some festival, like some university thing. Yeah, they like that, those sorts of bands, like after the indie thing was starting to die down, they were like, yeah, maybe the last ones to get loads of money.
Well, what about, like, I guess in the UK, right? Definitely.
In the UK,
I wonder if in America there's a bit more money.
Well, it seems like indie's got, I mean, Pitchfork is bigger than ever.
Yeah.
And so you get someone like Mitski or Japanese Breakfast.
Yeah.
And, like, Pitchfork Festival, the lineup is happening in Paris, it happened in London last year.
Yeah.
That stuff's quite, it seems to be big.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of those records are really original.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They don't sound like anything else.
That's true.
I mean, what were you know, talking about that time, where did you grow up? Did you grow up together? Did you grow up in a sort of, was there like a scene or a group of friends?
We both grew up in Free and Barnet and were brothers, so in the same house. It was always a real struggle for us to get gigs or ever get in any kind of...
We didn't really know anybody in the music scene. Like, we didn't, well, you know... When we were like 18, we didn't really know anybody except for this guy called Ad Hilmi. He used to put on like all ages shows, but he never really, I think he gave us like one gig. But like we were like, I don't know, I just felt like we didn't really kind of know, we were kind of like,
doing the headlights
kind of thing. Like, didn't really know what was going on. I mean, we loved music and we like read the NME and everything, but.
We weren't hip to the scene, that's the phrase I'm looking for.
Did you want to be hip to the scene?
Oh, yeah.
Within reason. Yeah,
definitely.
Within reason.
Yeah, yeah. But,
because I suppose to an extent, like, where the action is, you want to be close to the action.
Course.
You want to retain your sense of individuality.
Yeah,
you
true,
want to do
yeah.
your thing. You don't want to be surrounded by things and kind of accidentally get reflected.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we couldn't really get on any kind of proper gigging scene of any note that was noteworthy. We just kind of... in our own little world out in Barnet with our friend Reese.
And but then Barnet's just, not that far away.
No, yeah. But it kind of, I don't know.
Barnet's like closer than Watford.
Yeah, it's true. It just there wasn't much going on in Barnet itself. Right. Obviously, you know, it's only half an hour into this.
I don't think it had anything to do where he lived. I just think
it's a mindset.
The mindset.
I mean, just so we could have lived anywhere, we would have been the same.
You know, I don't like going to gigs and stuff. I still kind of keep myself to myself, really. I mean, like, I kind of have a couple of friends, but, you know, you get people that are really good at networking and then you get people that are more, like, introverted.
Sometimes...
I always feel like we're a bit like that. We kind of always have been like that.
I feel like going into a gig, like, say, like, if it's, like, a very trendy... say, like, someone like the Windmill, if it's, like, kind of those kind of bands that are kind of South London ones, like, the sort of... acolytes of the Far White family, but not them, but their kind of followers. Feels like going into Mordor and like so you see Barnett's sort of like a shire and then like these little hobbits sort of like.
But it's just a place, right? I mean, it makes me think, you know, when you say when Guitar.com magazine said, how does it feel like being a DIY band? Like that is a definition that someone has made up to just make things a bit easier and actually doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's just a it's a room and it's a pub and it's Tim and it's the promoter and it's those mags, it's those outside sources, it's those outside sort of voices that have said it's a scene and framed it in that
That's true.
You know,
it's up to us to find it. It's all in your head, none of it's really true. It's more we have played the Windmill and stuff, it's great, but like it's more just a certain, some of the people that hang out, just certain gigs could be there, could be
less about music and more about like social dynamics,
right?
Yeah, more about how good you are at socializing rather than how good your music is.
A friend of mine says recently, like, he just because he goes to a lot of gigs and stuff like that, but he when he goes, he just feels like he's on, he speaks to sort of other people, he feels he's on trial, or
there's a little
lot of paranoia. And
going to a gig by yourself,
yeah,
and then it seems like everyone knows each other.
Sure.
It can feel...
Yeah.
Have you found any kind of venues or groups of people that you've really got along with?
Our friends Bald and Jacks, they also like a band in South London, and they're kind of good friends of ours. And we always hang out with them, and we play a lot of gigs together anyway. So it's just naturally. Good.
Yeah, if you're friends with a band like that, and like they're just your friends anyway, and then you can, you know, watch a show and then hang out, have a post mortem after the gig, like in the morning, like go for a roast.
it's
kind of more. It's a different thing.
I always feel
there's love in that.
But some people are just very good like being by themselves, going to a room where they don't know anybody, and then just like putting themselves out there, so, and that's just like what some humans acclimatize themselves to do, but not necessarily people who play music aren't necessarily that confident in that arena. It's just that's the thing, is like you're meant to be like all things to all people.
Yeah,
it's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's like almost like that's the way that success is measured, is by sort of having that 360 of talents or whatever.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah.
Do you have like your own flats, and have you been able to sort of do that kind of stuff and live a sort of a fairly like kind of adult life? I suppose.
Not really. I once lived in this flat in Hoxton, which is horrible. Like that, you know, my experience of it has been sort of not really domestic at all, you know. Not domestic on my own terms anyway. I lived in this flat in Hoxton, and this guy that lived there was a drug dealer. And he was nice enough, but I'm pretty sure that he had like a meth habit or something, because he'd always come into my room to get like some of the rent money early, and he'd be like sort of sweating, and I could just tell something was up. Anyway, one night, like I could just hear this like shuffling about at 4 a.m. like people coming in through the door, and I think it was just like dealing drugs basically, and just I was scared that I was gonna get rushed, you know. So I got the fuck out of there, and I didn't go back. But
have you had quite forgiving family members or sort of support, you know, supportive?
Yeah, definitely.
In terms of being like, live with us and...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and also because they live in London, it's really easy. I mean...
Yeah, why would you live...
Sure.
...half a mile away?
Yeah.
If you get along with your family...
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they're saying you can live here either free or for much reduced... rent.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
It's less rent, and it's not so far that you can't. Yeah, it'd be nicer to be able to afford to have a flat and do the music, because basically me and Tom pay for a lot of the studio time and stuff, so we kind of need our wage, like a lot of it, to like go on that sort of thing.
And even then, you know, when you're not paying for all that stuff,
you're still skint, like,
you're
anyway.
You're always skint. I mean, I get paid quite well, but I'm always skint, and I'm not even. And that's just bills going on there. Anything like, and it just seems to vanish. And you know, we wouldn't be going out that much, and it's just like things just go down. And I'm just thinking that, like, sort of, you know, like it's just sort of impossible, like even more impossible, like nowadays to sort of. Keep things afloat, you know.
Yeah. So, I wonder, because it's so fucking hard, does that make the choice a bit easier, in a sense, to think music? Just music.
Yeah.
Because if we're not doing music, we're skint anyway.
Yeah.
And like you're going to fucking All Bar One or V Revs, or you're going for a roast that costs 20 quid.
Yeah.
You might as well spend money on doing things you like.
Yeah.
And also, I guess, you know, like once, like after all the kind of the sort of the dedication to like committing money to like these projects and things, you know, after a while, you just like, oh, I'm making up a holiday, you know, once in a while. But mainly, it's always just like slogging away.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
When you've worked for, you, when you're working on an album or something, you're caught up in the excitement of it and you're like, this is going to be the best thing ever, you know. You have to think that in order to do it, because it's, you know, it's obviously can get a bit tiring, but it's a lot of fun. But then once you've finished it, and maybe like you're not immediately getting back like loads of positive feedback, or no one really knows it's out, or do you know, that kind of thing. But you're like, oh fuck, now we've got to do this all over again.
Did that happen with the first record?
It did, and then,
or moments of that.
Kind of happens with all of them. Like,
it does happen.
No one really catches on to them until about a year later, and then you're like, kind of, you're doing the next one, and like you're only a quarter of the way through that one, just because like everything takes so much time, because me and Tom are paying for everything. That is like, in terms of like the recording stuff, like we don't have like a label or anything. So like everything takes like a lot more time than it would if you were just like signed to Polydor and they're just like, here's 100 grand or something, you know.
Yeah.
Go and make it.
And doing it for 12 years, that's a good amount of time.
And we're always on the next album, and was like, okay, we've got to save this amount for this thing, and then you think it's gonna cost this much, and then it ends up costing all these extras, and then you're always like sort of in debt to someone involved in the engineer or the studio, and then you have to pay back that. And it's just like basically always owing money, like always like just paying in installments and like never really being square.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What have you won? Part-time jobs, 101. Part-time jobs, 101. Part-time jobs, 101. Part-time jobs.
I find it really funny that these are the things that we prioritize. You know, like, we play music because it makes us feel good.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're definitely in a stage of life where we should be having salaries, and
sure,
we should be like individually responsible for ourselves. And there must be ways to do that and play music. But I really find it funny that people are like, no, this is it. You know, this is what I really take this seriously.
Yeah.
And just because you take it seriously doesn't mean that you can't have fun with it. It's a kind of almost contradictory kind of set of lifestyle.
Yeah. I don't want to do anything else in my life. I want to do music. I mean, there's nothing else more to life than music, in my opinion. I don't want to like do anything else except this. So
that's great. What a liberating
feeling
to say that out loud.
Yeah.
I imagine, you know, it's not been easy to say that out loud.
I mean, like, you know, you got to sort of, I mean, like, saying that to somebody like a stranger, they're probably like, they probably sort of like judge you for all sorts of things, like, this guy's deluded or something, or like, but then you just think,
everyone's deluded anyway.
Exactly. And
there's power in that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do me, thank you very much.
I think people are more deluded if they think not following their dreams will make them happy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's more like,
yeah, right.
Yeah. Because I just think, you know, if you don't take music seriously, if you really love it and you don't put it first, I just kind of think you don't really need to do music. You know, it's like, I always feel like it's, because I'm really like sort of die hard about it, you see. So I always feel like if you're not kind of like putting your heart into it, not putting it first, I just kind of think it's kind of like a waste of time. You may as well just like,
I mean, yeah, you might as well just go in all guns blazing in terms of like try and put everything behind it that you can, like all your resources, all your time, all your energy. Otherwise, it kind of feels like it's pointless just to put 50% in. Obviously it's tricky with money and stuff, but I don't know.
And that's kind of where I'm coming from. Like, that's sort of the idea of this show is that prioritizing it and taking that seriously and trying to send it 100% rather than 50%.
Sure.
That's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard with full-time work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even part-time work, that's hard with.
Yeah.
What have been your stories with that?
Tom actually did this job briefly as well, but I still do NHS admin stuff, but I used to work on the reception desk in the sexual health clinic, and people were always generally in a bad mood when they came in, so it was like quite a stressful job because appointments were always running late, so that was like, that wasn't a great job. But I did that for like quite a long time, like a few years, 4 to 5 years.
Being in that room, there's like a mixture of emotions there. Sexual health is pretty important.
Yeah.
I mean, all I was doing was checking people in for their appointments and booking them in. So I wasn't doing any of the, you know.
But yeah, but you're the person speaking to them. You know?
True, yeah,
you're
like, yeah.
You're
yeah.
the first person someone
first
speaks
person
to.
Yeah, see,
it was like the, well, that was like the front line of that whole operation.
Yeah, and then once you're done with that, then you had to go to the back and go on the phones, which was just as bad. So it was just like, it was full on sort of onslaught of
I actually remember someone trying to start on James once. This guy was like, oh, do you want to take this outside? And this guy was really, he was really angry, yeah. And like, we had to like get security to get him out. But sometimes you get people like that, like really aggressive, and you have to go and like sort of put a brave face on, because if you did sort of kind of scrap to them or tell them to fuck off, then you'd be fired. So you couldn't do anything about it. You just had to take endless shit from people.
Yeah, basically.
And it was horrible. Yeah.
How? What did you? Did you sort of find any mechanisms to?
You become like a zombie.
You do. Yeah.
Like, you just become like, yes, check you in at 12. Like, you just, you try and dampen all your emotions, positive or negative. Because then you know, you can feel like everyone's eyes on you in the waiting room, because like they've been there for an hour, and then a new wave of people are going to come and they're going to be annoyed. Just like, just a never ending, just like wave of like hostility coming from every angle. So that was fun.
Do you think like being brothers similar age, that you've been able to, you know, finding jobs has kind of been like a shared effort?
Yeah, I got Tom a job at Archway, and then, but you like moved to another place, didn't you?
I've done a lot of like admin jobs, you know, like a lot of like NHS admin jobs, and they're pretty easy. They're not, you know, you kind of find a little corner, sort of a safe little corner for yourself, and you can work it out and sort of, and it's not that hard, you know, but it's a good sort of like good funding for
what you
want to do. Yeah, could it afford you some time when you're doing it, when you're doing that type of work, those kind of tasks?
Yeah,
you've got,
definitely.
You've got some headspace.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I used to write lyrics on reception when it was quiet and stuff, like after like 6 o'clock when it kind of quietened down.
Talking about part-time jobs, I actually worked in record stores like 5 years, and you'd always get people coming in, like musicians and stuff. Bobby Gillespie came in to this one I worked at in Camden, which was like a rockabilly store. I used to come in there quite a lot, and I used to sort of, you know, sort of say a couple of words to each other.
Of course, this band was all.
And like, I was thinking to myself, I know it would be great one day if he came in and I had the opportunity to show him some music. You know, I had that thought in the back of my mind. So when
show him some of your music.
Yeah. So when, because we had a record player there, and we just made this single, Hey Little Man, and I had the test pressing, and when he came in one day, I had it on me, so I just played it, and just hoping that he would catch his interest, and I played it, and then he came up to me and said, oh, what's that? And I said, oh, it's my band. And he said, oh, I really like it, can I hear it again, please? And so I was like, oh yeah, sure. And so I played it again, and then eventually he said to me, oh, would you like to support us in, like, I don't know, Cambridge or something?
No way.
Yeah, because they had this like greatest hits tour coming up. So he asked me, and then I was thinking, oh, what, like, is it like some side project? It's not Primal Scream. I mean, it's got to be some like thing he's got going on the side. Like, he's probably going to play like in Cambridge, some club that he wants us to play with him at. And then a few months later, this guy Ian that was helping us out at the time, he secured about 6 dates on the Primal Scream Maximum Rock and Roll Tour. And so we got this news. We were on our way, actually, to another tour. We landed and we got the news. And that's basically, that all kind of stemmed from me being at that record shop and just showing that record to him. And on the basis of that, we got that tour. So that was like one of those things where you're like, oh,
it works
wow.
out.
That's great, because it wasn't even one of those things where you get a tour and it's all arranged by management, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't
it's
there were no handshakes done, there was no like favours. He literally asked us to play on the basis that he liked the music. So that was really cool to me, and I thought, oh, even if it doesn't work out, that's like a really kind of cool organic way of like getting a break, you know. Mm-hmm. I really love that.
Well, yeah. Lady Luck was smiling at me that day.
Brilliant. And hey, it could have been so easy to have been like to bottle it and be like, nah, I'm not gonna put the test pass on.
I mean, I was shaking, like, you know,
putting the needle on the record, shaking's not easy. You know, this conversation could quite easily be a cringy one, but when you're looking at your future, but when you're looking at plans and ideas and dreams and kind of, you know, tangible stuff as well, I mean, how do you plan, how do you operate? You know, Needle Factory is such a killer record. The artwork's great. You know, it's strong.
Well, we got a few, like, in terms of albums and stuff, we've got very definite plans to do that. We've got 2 records in mind. One, the next one, we've probably recorded 3 or 4 for it so far. So like we were recording them. Two of them were gonna go on Needle Factory, and then we already had too many, and they didn't seem to fit on that record. So then they kind of seemed to form the nucleus of a new record, and then we've got a bunch of other tracks which we're gonna record later this year, hopefully, which will are meant to be going on that one. So that's the next, like, definite thing.
And you've got, and again, this is some sort of, you know, I mean, at least I don't know many people in bands who I've seen this conversation happen, but, you know, an aesthetic, you know, how you want your photos to look,
sure.
How you want your videos to look.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure lots of people, I mean, myself included, growing up in punk rock bands, I was like, I don't want to fucking know about it. I don't care. Just do it. And then at some point you realise, actually, that's a really big part of it, because that's how people receive that information.
Yeah.
Tom's always had like a kind of visual eye for that, kind of like an interest in it, in terms of like the videos and stuff. Well, it's like he's always, since we were like 12, been like thinking about like making up like imaginary bands. And then like, and then the Roves is kind of like, you know, well, it's a real band, but it's like sort of an imaginary band that became real. It's like our band. So it's like he's always been doing that naturally. It's just like...
That's great.
So it's not like a forced thing. Whereas it's like, if I were to do it, I'd be sort of at a loss, I think.
Did you see that Jarvis Cocker exhibition? It was in West London, down the road from Madame Tussauds, like by Marylebone last year. And here was his textbooks from school.
I think I might have seen a clip of that.
He was drawing what Pulp would look like.
Oh, amazing.
And the different clothes and the different, you know, the ties.
That's
and
so
everything.
Cool.
Yeah.
Down to quite specific detail.
Yeah.
I think I saw a clip of that on Newsnight, and that is quite similar to what Tom does or did. So it's kind of...
I used to have like the fantasy bands where like, I'd design each album, you know, and they'd have their like... It would be like some kind of alternate universe where the Beatles and Stones didn't exist. When I first worked at Sounds of Swing at the record shop, the boss was like a really scary boss, and you know, like he would be in a mood or something, you know, I don't really know why, for whatever reason, but he would come in and be in like a terrible mood, and then it might be as simple as like, I think I may have broken the website once, like a shop website, and then he had this massive go at me, and I was like, I don't know, I felt terrible. But then, what he would do, he was quite like generous, and what he would do if he ever sort of, you know, had a go at me, he bought me like a cake once, and he sent someone from across the road, like his like business partner, to like deliver me like the cake, or like could be like a glass of wine from the pub. So he gets someone to deliver the glass of wine from where he was into the shop, because you're opposite a pub. So like he kind of, you know, like redeem himself with like a little kind of
guilty gift.
Yeah. So.
How about you, James?
Nothing insane, but I was working at Middlesex University, and I was meant to be like entering all this data, like all these like reports, all these surveys they got back or something. And it was over a period of 3 weeks, and the person I was, like me and this other guy were doing it, and like he was like quite a big Beatles fan, and we were talking about Beatles Anthology, the documentary, and we just talk about it all day. And just basically, I'd enter this data, and then like at the end of the 3 weeks, like one of my bosses basically said that we'd entered all the data in wrong, like we put in the wrong box. We started in the wrong, like I don't know, there's something had gone wrong on the wrong cell. Yeah, and the whole, it was useless because we'd just been talking about, which we weren't concentrating, just talking about like.
I did the same job as that. I used to
revolver.
I did the same job as that for like about 3 months, and I was so lazy. Like I used to really take the piss. I used to come at like 4 o'clock and then leave at 5. You know, like I just sort of like.
How showed, did you get away with that? What's
I
the
didn't,
secret?
I didn't. That? They basically. They had a go. They had a like word with me and said, "You can't stop doing this." And eventually, obviously, like my contract ended, and they didn't keep me on.
They knew.
So like, I was just, you know, I just used to try and do. Like, I'd come in, and then I'd sort of show my face, and then disappear for like an hour and have a shower, and then come back to work. And they were like, "You can't just come in and." Fuck about and have a shower on our time.
The company dying.
Yeah, so that was, I remember that place. Yeah, very patient.
You smartened up your act.
Yeah.
Great. Tom and James, thanks so much.
Thank
for
you.
Doing this.
Thank you very much.
No worries.
Great stuff.
So there was Tom and James from The Roves. Their third album, Needle Factory, is out now. They're playing the Lexington this Saturday. It's a fiver in advance. Go and get your tickets to that. It's going to be brilliant. And see you tomorrow with an episode with Owen from The Tubs. Here's some Cox Barra. I've been working all day, bobbing my head on the side, running around like a blue ass fly. I've been working, yeah, I've been working all day, bobbing my head. Every blink of me, I've been on the go. Up and down the ladder like a fiddler's elbow. I've been working, yeah, I've been working all day, bobbing my head. This is a Mighty Moon Media podcast.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.